It's okay when children act like children, even when they fight and squabble. There's something cute about that. They can say things that make us laugh. But it's tragic when adults do it. There's nothing more tragic than to see children in adult bodies. They've got the power, but they don't have the wisdom. And whenever you see church splits or church fights or church arguments, what you are seeing and what you are hearing is children in adult bodies.
Make a connection. Make a connection at the foot of the cross. Cast your burdens on His word. Make a connection.
Welcome to The Connection with Skip Heitzig, and today we begin a new teaching that addresses division in the church. Did you know that 43% of churchgoers say they don't fully trust their church? As you can imagine, this lack of trust is one of the many factors that leads to thousands of churches splitting or shutting down every year. The family of God sometimes disagrees with each other, but we need to avoid letting those disagreements cause division. And that's what Skip examines today here in The Connection. But before we begin, if you haven't taken the time to call us or write, we invite you to do so. And if it's your first time, we'll send you a free teaching from Skip. Just call 1-800-922-1888 or write us at P.O. Box 95707, Albuquerque, New Mexico, 87199. And are these broadcasts inspiring you to follow Christ more closely? Tell us about it. Email to mystory@connectiononline.org. And if you want to come alongside us as a financial partner to bring these teachings to people around the world, just visit connectiononline.org/give. Right now, let's grab our Bibles and see what it says about getting along with our brothers and sisters in Christ and how we can avoid church splits.
Make a connection. Make a connection at the of the cross. Cast your burdens on His word. Make a connection. A connection.
In our series, Church, Who Needs It?, we'll be in Philippians chapter 2 today, as Skip Heitzig begins by sharing a bit about his childhood.
There wasn't always harmony in our home growing up. I was one of four boys. Four rowdy boys. And did we know how to argue? Did we know how to fight? And sometimes the fights were very vocal, very noisy. I remember throwing my brother through a window and him throwing me through the same window after it was repaired by my parents. I remember coming at my brother with a knife and him coming at me with a pencil. And we have since then learned to get along a lot better with each other as we have grown up. But that happens in families. If you are parents or you think back to your own family, you've got your own stories. I know that. Well, in the Christian family, when you have spiritual infants and spiritual adolescents and spiritual teenagers and even spiritual adults, there can be friction within God's family. It's sibling rivalry of sorts. There was a dad who came home, wanted some peace and quiet, opened up the newspaper to read, and he heard his young daughter and her friends in the next room. They were talking. Then they got noisy and more argumentative, and they were pushing and they were yelling and even calling each other names. And when dad put his newspaper down and demanded an account, his little daughter walked in and smiled and said, "Daddy, it's okay, we're just playing church." But the goal is to grow up. The goal for Christians is to grow up. Paul said as much to the church at Ephesus. Paul wrote them and said, "Grow up." Or in his own words, that we should no longer be children, but that we may grow up in all things. It's okay when children act like children, even when they fight and squabble. There's something cute about that. They can say things that make us laugh. But it's tragic when adults do it. There's nothing more tragic than to see Children in adult bodies, they've got the power, but they don't have the wisdom. And whenever you see church splits or church fights or church arguments, what you are seeing and what you are hearing is children in adult bodies. That's what you're seeing. That's what you're hearing. Children at play who don't want unity but will promote disunity just to get their own agenda. Now, Christians throughout history haven't always gotten along. And if I may just switch from the need to grow up to just say that it doesn't always happen. And I just want to normalize this just a little bit. I want to normalize it. As I read my New Testament, I discover that even Jesus' closest apostles didn't get along with each other, that they had fights while Jesus walked the earth and argued about who would be the greatest in the kingdom. Who's going to sit at Jesus' right hand when he comes again? As I read the New Testament, I discover that even Peter and Paul didn't get along with each other but had an argument in Galatia over the meaning of the law and its application. As I read my New Testament, I discover that the council at Jerusalem argued about the relationship of the Christian to the law of Moses. And on and on and through history and through councils, even during the Reformation, great reformers like Luther and Zwingli argued about the Lord's Supper and how that is to be administered. According to U.S. News and World Report, there are 22,000 different denominations and sects of Christianity throughout the world. Now, what does that tell you? It tells you that you have a lot of different ways of looking at things and dealing with each other. So, the church is the society of the redeemed, not the society of the perfect. And I say all that in hopes that you will lower your expectation a notch or two when it comes to the church. There's some people that have such high expectations of perfection among the church and church leaders, it is impossible and will always be impossible to please them. Well, we're in Philippians 2, and I know I told you to turn to Philippians 2, but what I'd like to show you is that there were two forces at work that were pressuring the Philippians to divide. Pressure number one, false teachers from the outside. Pressure number two, fighting Christians from the inside. False teachers, fighting Christians. Both were addressed by Paul. If you look at chapter 3, you'll see the first. Finally, my brethren, rejoice in the Lord. For me to write the same things to you is not tedious, but for you it is safe. Beware of dogs. Beware of evil workers. Beware of the mutilation. These were false teachers. He calls them dogs. I like Paul. The second problem was the fighting members on the inside. Look at chapter 4. Therefore, my beloved, my longed for, my joy, my crown, so stand fast in the Lord, beloved. I implore Yodia and I implore Syntyche, these are two women in the church, to be of the same mind in the Lord. And I urge you also, true companion, help these women who labored with me in the gospel, with Clement also, and the rest of my fellow workers. We don't exactly know what the issue was, but apparently there were two strong personalityed women in the church at Philippi that polarized people around their issue. They were at odds with each other. Maybe these were two women who were there from the very beginning when Paul first went to Philippi down at that riverbank. But now it was causing a division. So, to our text in Philippians chapter 2, he is laying groundwork. This is groundwork of getting along with one another. This is where it all begins. Here are the basics of getting along and the basis of getting along. Philippians 2, 1 through 4. Now, you have four verses, as do I in my Bible, in this chapter. What you may not know is that in the original Greek, it's one long, complex, ongoing sentence. Chapter 1, or verses 1 through 4, is all one sentence. And it's put out in a literary format, a literary device called prodesis and apodesis. an if-then clause, a conditional clause. If this is so, then that must be so. That's how it is set out. That's how Paul works it to make a very strong point. Now, what I'd like to do this morning is look at these two things, the basics of getting along and the basis of getting along. I'm going to not start in verse 1, but actually in verse 3 to give you the basics. Because in verse 3 and verse 4, Paul gives us two ways we should not be with each other and two ways we should be with each other. Don't be like this, Paul says, but be like that. And so these are the basics. Negative and positive. By the way, these first two negatives are exactly the same way and same reasons that Satan didn't get along with God. I want you to hear this. Exactly the same thing that happened with Satan and God could happen with each other in church. Listen to what Satan says in Isaiah 14, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will be like the Most High. What is that? That's this. That's selfish ambition and conceit. The very two things Paul says, don't be like that. So these first two things describe the personality of Satan. The second two things, humility, etc., describe the personality of Jesus Christ. The first two things will ruin a church. The second two will remedy a church. So look at the first. Number one, don't live selfishly. Or as he writes it, let nothing be done through selfish ambition. There's not a person in this room who doesn't know what selfishness looks like. Do you have children? Then you know what selfishness looks like. You have parents? Then you know what selfishness looks like. Do you know any other human being? Then you know what selfishness looks like. And if you're honest with yourself, if you're the only one around you, you know what selfishness looks like. You getting my point? It's a natural human trait. It is a trait of all fallen human beings. Calvin Miller said that if we were the ones to have written the Lord's Prayer, it would sound like this. Our Father who art in heaven, gimme, gimme, gimme. That's selfish ambition. That's natural fallen humanity. Now, the word means to cause division in order to get your own way. To cause division in order to get your own way. This is a pushy person. I'm going to get my way, says that person as he walks into an issue or a situation. That's selfish ambition. It's like the little boy and his sister who were riding a toy horse together out in front of a supermarket. You know, you put a quarter in and the thing moves around. I don't know if they still have those. I guess it's all replaced by iPhones and gadgets now. But in the days when there were those little horses out in front of supermarkets, a little boy and his sister were trying to ride it together. Good luck. The little boy turned to his sister and said, you know, if one of us would get off, there'd be more room for me. That's selfish ambition. Me first philosophy. And that ruins friendships, families, marriages, and churches. Let nothing be done through selfish ambition. So that's the first thing not to be. Don't live selfishly. The second negative, the second thing not to be is don't live pridefully. For in the same sentence, let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit. Now, if any of you this morning have the old King James Bible, I just confess to you, they translate this word far better than the New King James, NIV, NLT, anybody. They use the word vainglory. Vainglory, a very descriptive word of what this is about. Conceit, vain glory, the empty pride of living for other people's opinions. The empty pride living for other people's opinions. This is a person who is so exalted in his own opinion and he's concerned that others share that same view of himself or herself. Paul says in Romans 12, verse 3, that we should not think of ourselves more highly than we ought to think. That's vainglory. That's conceit. That is the very opposite of what Paul considered himself to be. of what Peter considered himself to be, of what John considered himself to be. What is the one word that all three of these writers introduced themselves as whenever they wrote a New Testament book? Servant. You got it. Servant. Paul, a slave of Christ, a bond slave or a bond servant. Servants keep churches from splitting. Vainglorious, self-absorbed people help it split. There's two ways you can enter a room. You can enter a room of people with a sort of a stance and attitude that says, well, here I am. Or you can enter the same room with a group of people with the attitude that says, ah, there you are. That's a servant. That's the servant. I read something a long time back. I thought about it for a good long while. It seems that if thoroughbred horses get attacked, that they have a strategy. If they're attacked from the outside, they form a circle, and their heads are all in the center of that circle, giving them the ability to kick outwards and backwards in any direction from any predator. That's smart. But the same article talked about how donkeys react when they're attacked. They also form a circle, but they all face outward, and they'll start kicking, but they'll start kicking each other. I read that and I thought, that is so descriptive, so telling, so indicting. I guess it begs a question, are we thoroughbreds or donkeys? Don't live selfishly, don't live pridefully. Those are the first two negatives. Here's the second two, and they're positives. Do live humbly. Do live humbly. Look at verse 3. Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit. Those are the first two negatives. But in lowliness of mind. Lowliness of mind. Now, lowliness of mind is one word in the Greek language, tapaino phrasune, six syllables, tapaino phrasune. That's hard to say. It took me all day to memorize how to say that just for this moment. But the reason I did it is this. One of the most despised characteristics in Greek philosophy was the quality, they didn't call it a quality, the vice of being tapaino phrasune, of having a low mind. In fact, the Greeks gave that title to slaves that they would conquer. Somebody who would grovel in the dust was given this humble-minded, lowly-minded title. So if you were conquered by a Greek army and they turned you into submissive slaves, they would give you this title, lowliness of mind. And that is because the virtues that the Greeks loved were things like self-assertiveness, confidence, self-esteem. So they saw this not as a virtue, but as a vice. And I'm bringing that up because that's exactly the opposite of how the Bible views it. The Bible doesn't view lowliness of mind as a vice, but as a virtue, something to want, something to incorporate in one's life. The opposite of being confident and self-assertive, lowliness of mind. The crouching submissiveness of a slave. And why is that? Because that's exactly the attitude of Jesus Christ. Remember I said the first two are the personality of Satan, the second two are the personality of Christ? This is the personality of Christ. Look at verse 5. He brings that point very clear. Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus, who being in the form of God did not consider it robbery to be equal with God, but he made himself of no reputation, taking the form of a bond servant and coming in the likeness of men and being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to the point of death, even the death on the cross. Jesus didn't exalt himself, he humbled himself. You want to get along with other Christians in church? Do that. Do that. It shouldn't be the attitude of how can I climb the ladder higher and higher, but how can I descend the ladder lower and lower like Christ? Those are the basics. Lowliness is the grease that keeps the gears of relationships smooth in any body of believers. Jesus said, "Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart." And whenever I see somebody who is puffed up and they have these exaggerated ideas of their own importance and want everybody else to know about them, I think that person isn't following the one who's lowly in heart. One of my favorite authors, F.B. Meyer, Frederick B. Meyer, a British pastor, did work on both sides of the Atlantic a century ago, almost, wrote this: "I used to think that God's gifts were on shelves one above the other, and that the taller we grew in Christian character, the more easily we could reach them. But I now find that God's gifts are on shelves one beneath the other, and that it's not a question of growing taller, but of stooping lower." You want a rewarding church experience? Get down. Sounds like I'm a disco guy. Get down. Get lower. Get more humble. So do live humbly. And finally, the second of the two positive characteristics, do live respectfully. Do live respectfully. Again, verse 3, it says, "In lowliness of mind," that's the first, here's the second, "let each esteem others better than himself." If you're an American, if you're a Westerner, and I assume all of you are, this flies directly in the face of everything you've been taught the last 30 years in our culture. This says, let each of you esteem others better than yourself. The person next to you, the person in front of you, the person behind you, better than yourself. The last 30 years has seen the idea of self-esteem become the hallowed virtue of Western culture. It's all about your self-esteem. Well, how does this affect my self-esteem? Well, if they say that to me, what will that do to my self-esteem? And your self-esteem is so guarded and so important, and it's so hallowed. I went on Google yesterday and Googled self-esteem. 13,900,000 hits. Almost 14 million hits. Self-esteem, the hallowed virtue of the American pantheon. But here it says, let each esteem others better than yourself. See what I mean? It's directly antithetical. It's counterintuitive to everything we've been taught. The Williams translation puts it this way: practice treating one another as your superior. What would happen if we started doing that? If when we met a person, there's a little bit of a riff, we start imagining this person is my superior, my boss, writes my paycheck. You're going, okay, that's tough. How do we pull that off? Verse 4 tells you how to do that. Let each of you look out not only for his own interests, but also for the interests of others. That's how we do it.
You know, a lot of the divisions and disagreements in the church could be avoided if we simply learn to swallow our pride. Of course, that's easier said than done. After all, if we're the ones who are right, why shouldn't we make sure everyone else knows it? But is being right really worth dividing the body of Christ? Now, that's something we should consider. And that's going to wrap up our time for today. But before we go, here are some ideas for Christmas gifts that you can wrap up and put under the Christmas tree from the Connection Resource Center.
Don't look now, but Christmas is right around the corner. Are you ready to search the world 10 times over to find the perfect gift for everyone on your list? Well, don't worry about it. We've got the whole family covered in the Connections annual Christmas catalog. For the kids, check out the newest VeggieTales adventure, Beauty and the Beat, a story about unconditional love featuring 8 songs performed by Kelly Pickler. Then, pick out an MP3 player preloaded with your choice of Pastor Skip Heitzig's series, I Dare You, from the Edge of Eternity, or playlist, which makes the perfect on-the-go gift for the growing believer. Finally, get the whole family laughing with a pair of Tim Hawkins DVDs featuring hours of the Christian comedian's family-friendly, side-splitting humor. The shipping for all gifts in the catalog is free. Order today when you visit connectiononline.org. Find out more details when you call us at 1-800-922-1888.
And if you'd like a copy of today's study, Avoiding Church Splits, just call us at 1-800-922-1888 or visit connectiononline.org/radio. Each copy is just $6. That includes shipping. And if you have a story or a testimony about how you've been impacted by these broadcasts, we'd love to hear from you. Send us an email to mystory@connectiononline.org or write to us here at The Connection. That's P.O. Box 95707, Albuquerque, New Mexico, 87199. And join us next time as we explore more ways to keep the church from splitting when we continue our series, Church, Who Needs It? Right here on The Connection, a presentation of Connection Communications.
Make a connection. Make a connection at the foot of the cross. Cast your burdens on His word. Make a connection. A connection. A connection.
Connecting you to God's never-changing truth in ever-changing times.